Welcome to the Watch OK Please podcast, a podcast where three friends try to convince each other to devote what little time they have left to watch more TV and or movies than they've ever wanted to watch. Please join us while we argue about our media cues and waste everyone's valuable time on things that just don't matter. Hey Watchers, it's Nine, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. This week, we get Jason and Dan's feedback on the sketch comedy show, I Think You Should Leave, with Tim Robinson, which is available on Netflix. Just as a reminder, we're only going to have one pitch or feedback segment per episode going forward. Please let us know what you think about the format change by either rating or reviewing us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, leaving us a voicemail on our Anchor page at anchor.fm/watchokplease, or via our social media pages. Also, have you tried subscribing? I hear it's great, so, you know, watch, listen, rate, and subscribe, please. All right, Watchers, let's get ready to figure out which of our own little buff boys is the buffest of them all. Enjoy the show. Hey, guys, it's Nyan. As expected, I'm a wreck right now because I'm waiting to hear what Jason and Dan have to think about I think you should leave with Tim Robinson, available on Netflix, the first two seasons, and with the third season that's been greenlit. So, guys, I'm dying. What did you guys think of this show?
Magicians suck.
they are pretty terrible, and you make more money than them, and you lose.
Yes, I do 10 times more money.
Magicians do suck. Dan, I'm going to let you go first. What'd you think?
So every episode has like so much to take from it. And I definitely understand what, you know, your Nine's points in the pitch of this for sure. The stakes in every sketch that was out there were 100% like right up front. Like within like the first 20 to 30 seconds, you knew what was on the line across the board. It doesn't matter if it was, you know, say, if you have a tattoo, you don't get a gift from Santa Claus, to choking on hot dogs, to, you know, $450 for a complicated patterned shirt, to pee on your pants, to random SNL cast members, you know, coming in on random places. So you got a full spread of everything here. And like I said, I think a lot of people might need some adjustment to get to this kind of place. But I think for me, it was like after that, I think it was after like the first episode, I think I got way more comfortable with the dynamic from it. Cause I think my mind and my visceral reaction to some of these kind of setups needed a moment to kind of catch up. But once I was there, you know, like there were a lot of sketches that were like, oh my gosh, this is brilliant. The corncob TV thing just like got me rolling crazy.
Speaking of the corncob TV thing, and I was going to delve into the fandom a little bit later, but I'm glad you called this out. I randomly found on Reddit someone whose entire Tinder profile was just screen caps from the corncob TV sketch and then one picture of themselves. I'll share the link with you guys later, but it was insane. I think the post was just like, I'm no Roy Dunk, but I'm a regular guest on the Colgate Comedy Hour.
Yes, Roy Dunk. Awesome. Oh, my God.
I can see what you're saying, Dan. That makes sense in terms of like needing that moment to adjust and then just going full blast.
Yeah. Actually, from season 2, episode 3, you sure about that? You sure about that's why? I think that the quote here, it's a little bit Tarantino, a little bit of man. It's that cosmic gumbo. I think that kind of really sums up what I watched, I think.
Oh, yeah. We used to say it was a cosmic gumbo.
Yeah.
You know, so it's funny you say that. I got to say, I got maybe 3 episodes in before I maybe even like chuckled, to be honest. Like, I'm like sitting there watching it. And I'm like, I don't get it. Like, and I was like primed. I'm like ready to go. And I'm like, what's happening here? He's trying to eat his hamburger. Okay. All right. And I'd like be starting to like warm up. And it wasn't clicking for me right away. However, as I got more used to it, I started to appreciate it more. And I actually then went back and rewatched some of the first episodes again. And I appreciated them more the second time than I did the first time. Not all, like some worked and some didn't for me. It was definitely very like hit or miss. But I feel like I definitely needed to get into this mindset of what to expect from this show before I started appreciating. I actually think the one with the Santa Claus as a gritty cop.
Crashmore. God. That was so amazing.
Like the first time I saw that, I was like, what is happening? I do not understand this at all. And then the second time I watched it, watching not necessarily the first part of it, but there was like the second part where they're getting interviewed on AOL.
AOL Blast. That's why like, no one watches AOL Blast.
It was even like little things like that, which I definitely like didn't catch the first time. And then the second time I'm like, okay, like AOL Blast, like appreciating just how absurd this all is. And, you know, watching Santa Claus get all pissed. And then it just gets like weirder and weirder. And he's talking about how he's seen everyone naked. And everyone else is getting a little horrified.
They were just missing, you know, Maria Menounos or Ryan Seacrest in that bit. It would have been perfect.
Yes, definitely. Oh, my goodness. Maria Menounos would have been like exactly right for that bit.
It's funny because the guy who plays Wesley Fillmore, who's doing the interview, showed up on a Super Bowl commercial, and all I could do was scream at the TV at the time and go like, "This is why no one watches AOL Play."
Perfect.
I think it's crypto.com like or FTX commercial. It's
not. Yeah, 100%. Matt Damon.
but I can see what you're saying, and as you're talking through it, that may have been the intent of the creators in terms of why the order was done in the way it was. What I did, the way I curated this was based on the sketches that I love the most, but this was based on me having seen it from the beginning to the end, like in sequence.
So when you say the sketches you love the most, because literally you gave us over half the series.
Right.
So were the sketches you love the most, the first ones or towards the end or just sort of interspersed throughout?
Are you going to tell people that I housed Taylor's Burger?
I'm joking. Unfortunately, Professor Uribe has passed away. It's real sad. But to answer your question, I front loaded it with the sketches that I gravitated to the most. Like so, the Dylan's Burger sketch, Detective Crashmore. Like I've watched those over and over again. Because I thought there were earlier ones that didn't do it for me as much. And so I was trying to front load it with the ones that kind of clicked for me a lot. Like the Little Buff Boys, the Ghost Tour. Actually, Ghost Tour took me a little bit to come around to.
You see, that's funny because like Ghost Tour, I like Ghost Tour. In some ways, I feel like that's the most perfect representation of this show.
I feel that.
You know, and I feel like that's another one, like the second time I saw it, I liked it much more. The first time I'm like, okay, so this guy's just like really immature. Well, that's stupid. But as I watched it a second time, and I'm now at this point, like essentially immune to over the top immature behavior. I'm now like starting to see the little subtlety in that sketch and go like, oh, I get it. So it's over the top, but it's not about that. It's about the fact that, you know, this guy just has absolutely zero control over what he's saying. It's almost like the first time I watched it from the perspective of the guy who's giving the tour.
Right.
Right.
And then from the second time I'm watching it, I'm looking at it from Tim Robinson's perspective.
Yes. Yes. 100%.
It's funny you said that you sort of front loaded the sketches that you liked more. I actually was the opposite. As we were getting towards the end, I actually thought the best episode was the pilot episode.
Interesting. Oh.
You know, and I think Little Buff Boys, like that's an example. You know, it totally reminded me because it's very similar to that other sketch of the baby contest.
Oh yeah,
where baby. Like, rating the babies. Yes. You know, who's the best baby? Yeah. And I thought that worked so much better than Little Buff Boys for me personally. Like,
the oral was not necessary for the record.
Right, but like that's like the kind of place that the baby one went, whereas the Buff Boys was just felt weird to me.
Right, I can see that. I actually like Baby of the Year more than Little Buff Boys. After multiple viewings, Little Buff Boys has grown up on me over time. And I think it's more about what I was trying to make fun of in the pitch, in that the guy who's doing the Little Buff Boys competition, he's clearly the one who came up with this and his entire life is riding on this. Like, and the minute right. that, like, the yeah, guy he put the
box his up, entire thing joke, is
like, nope, this is mine. It's all riding on this. I'm gonna lose my house if this doesn't work out.
Everything's riding on goose suits and the fact that it cannot be Troll Boy.
Right, but well, you guys know you know why I can't be Troll Boy. You
get it? I love the look on Troll Boy's face. He's just like, I know.
Yeah, I know. I'm not it.
No, I mean, look, there's a million little details in there. I love when he took a sip from that gallon of water.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
I'm like, that's so perfect. And that's such a little detail.
Yeah.
But you totally know, like, he's dying and he just needs to just like keep drinking that water.
Or whatever it is.
Or whatever it is.
I mean, I'm thinking it's water, but we never know. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of truly memorable moments here across the board here, and I definitely see how what you were talking about, how Tim appears a little less front and center in the season two items. So I think that was very interesting to see how that kind of works out, because I feel like Tim has a very unique way of approaching a sketch in that regard, in where I'm going to show you a different level or a different interpretation of awkward that is different from the last one.
Yeah, there are layers there. I can see that.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And I mean, definitely, everything he does here, for me, the peak level of discomfort, I would say, was the hit and run bit at the party.
Yes. Yeah. That was a good one. I like that one, and I know what you mean. It definitely was like awkward, and it definitely that actually felt the most like how I feel like you pitched it, Nyan, where it's just like it just keeps escalating and escalating and escalating, and that one just kept going uphill. On the flip side of it, though, it sort of starts off with this weird premise, which
right,
this whole like, oh, we have to tell a lie, okay, yeah. And he just like freaks out for no reason. Which I get, that's how sketch comedy works, but in that one, it just felt like really extreme to me.
Yeah, and like the fact he threatens to kill him or embarrass him because of that, it was like wow, that's pretty out there. So, but again, there are societal pressures that people deal with, so I can kind of see how in a certain situation things might get out of hand. I'm not sure they get that out of hand, but you never know.
Well, sometimes maybe the more subtle humor. So, like, the sketch where he's trying to open the door, I think it was, like, the first of the whole series,
that's
where
right,
he's at the interview goes well, and he's trying to leave the cafe, and he's convinced he can pull the door in.
Yep.
And it was one of the less shouting. In fact, there's no shouting in that sketch, which was kind
right.
of unusual for the series. There was a lot of shouting in the show. But yeah. It's just, you watch the look on his face where he's like, this is the story, I'm sticking to it. I will break this door if I have to. And he does.
And the one like massive bead of sweat that's coming down his head was like perfect.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of different, ways, to go about this. And I thought, a lot of the different, people that were brought in again, I didn't realize, that, Cecily Strong and Vanessa Bayer and the people were in this as well. So it was kind of cool to see some familiar faces here or there, and although the one phrase that kind of almost made me do a spit take was actually during the baby sketch, where they said, we have a certified chode on our hands. I literally almost did a spit take when I heard that.
Oh, that was good.
But did you guys have a favorite sketch?
That's a tough, yeah.
Based on all the stuff you've seen, even if you've gone past what was recommended?
For me, I loved the gift receipt. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, agreed.
That was pretty great.
Yeah.
Mud pie.
I definitely love then the Calico or Calico Cut
Pants. CalicoCutPants.com.
Again, that's like, what I liked about that one was it starts off really stupid, right?
Yeah.
It's like, make sure to wipe up. Oh, we've got a solution for that. It was kind of a funny premise, but like, you're like, oh, it was like a little chuckle-worthy sketch. But then as it kept going, it just got progressively more insane. And then eventually it like out of nowhere turns into Fight Club.
Yes.
And like, I had no clue that was going to happen. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm like, yeah. That's pretty funny. I like that one.
Yeah, she just keeps eating batteries. I don't know what's up with that. But yeah, that was definitely probably one of my top ones there for sure. I mean, I did like the Baby of the Year. Obviously, it was as mentioned before. Yeah, the bit about Dan Flashes, I kind of tickled me funny because my name is obviously Dan. So I don't own this store, but maybe I should own this store. I don't know. I mean, I mean, $450 for a complicated pattern shirt. I mean, if it only took me, $30 to make it, that's a pretty sick margin right there. I'm just saying,
That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's the one I didn't totally get. It's like memorable, but why? What is it about these shirts that brings in forgettable white men to have seizures staring at it?
Yeah,
this is based on something that happened in Tim Robinson's life.
Right.
Where clearly I can do anything and people become obsessed with this, or I don't know. He had some experience that inspired this.
I can't find
that experience in my own life.
I have two theories. And both of them involve designers that whose names start with the letter T. So I think it's either Tommy Bahama or Todd Oldham. So you make your choice.
I don't know Todd Oldham. Obviously, I know Tommy Bahama. What's Todd Oldham?
So Todd Oldham, he was this kind of really super trendy, urban fashion designer that he was one of the first fashion designers to put his stuff into kind of these large, chain stores. I can't remember if it was Target he was in first, or it was or Walmart or something like that. But yeah, he had these very kind of urban, colored designs that were kind of more out there for a while. I mean, I wouldn't call it, I wouldn't call it urban chic, but it was, or homeless chic, but it was kind of a little bit like that. It was not super haute couture kind of thing. And that's what made it really personable when people put on or wore his things. But it was still the threads were, they seemed to be well made. He definitely put a lot of, thought process into designing and also into the actual fabrication thereof. And he just, pay random slavers to make it, basically.
Got it.
But yeah, I feel like there's some sort of, there's this idea that something represents me as a forgettable white man in this culture. And this shirt represents, the uniqueness that I feel on the inside that I'm going to wear on the outside.
I didn't think
I was going freaking deep there. Holy cow.
I mean, I guess when you say it like that, I'm kind of like, yeah, that's kind of like what Hawaiian shirts are, right? For white guys, yeah.
That's wild. Yeah, STFU, Doug.
So it sounds like you guys both enjoyed this kind of for different reasons, but you did ultimately both enjoy it, which is great.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, but I do have to make one clear cut statement. I would never have sloppy steaks.
Yeah, as someone who doesn't eat beef, that confused me even more so than people who actually eat steak. So that I would leave that to the beef eaters to explain would ever be interesting.
We had friend of the show Mike, and I'll just call him Mike, and we had a certain dinner. Bachelor party style at one of the many chain restaurants of the Palm, and many of us had obviously besides Nine basically had steak and whatnot, and I feel like kind of place where these guys would have went into and did their sloppy steaks, and thank you Caleb, and I don't think any one of us would have done that ever no matter how slick back any of our hair was, it just was not going to happen.
Right. That's one of those things I didn't quite get. And yet somehow sloppy steaks is one of the things I've totally taken away from this show. I literally just have the word sloppy steak running in my head. But it makes absolutely no sense.
That's right.
There's no reason. I will tell you, as someone who does eat beef, there is not a single reason you would put water on top of it. And I don't really know what this is supposed to be making fun of or where this idea comes from. Other than, again, Tim Robinson must have had some very bizarre experience in his life. And he's like, sloppy steaks. There you go.
That's it. Also, the bones are their money and so are the worms. So, I mean, that's what it comes down to me right now. So.
That's one sketch that everyone seems to love on the internet, but I fall in love with as much. The day Robert Palin's or whatever, the country music sketch. I get it. It's growing on me a little bit, but like it doesn't grab me the way the other ones do.
I agree.
Well, I mean, I had such a kind of a kind of cutback to various different other music related movies and whatnot, whether it be Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, you know, when they're singing, you know, I Am the Man of Constant Sorrow. I had a little bit more of a kind of homage kind of thing for that. And then maybe that's, and I remember seeing, you know, interpretations of Elvis or other, you know, people of that time period, you know, doing their own recordings. Or even like thinking back to Dennis Quaid and Great Balls of Fire. So I had a lot of these kind of other kinds of, you know, mental, you know, imagery pictures and how that worked out. So maybe for me, that's the reason why I took more away from it, because for me it was more of a bit of, you know, yes, it's a situational kind of thing that's happening here, but at the same time, I was pulling, you know, kind of these nostalgia vibes off of it. So I think that's why I took more from it from that. So
got it. You were able to walk the line.
Yes, 100%. Yes, 100%. Yeah.
That one definitely felt to me like kind of an SNL sketch, to be honest. You know,
it definitely was. It definitely screamed SNL, 100%. I definitely
was like, hey, what if somebody like blew, you know, messed up this whole moment, and then we're just going to stick to that one gag over and over again? It was okay. It wasn't bad. It just was, you know,
right.
It was what it was.
Yeah,
yeah. I had to mention another cameo there that was pretty wild. Was the guy, when all the guys were hanging around the card table and they were complaining about their wives, but the guy who didn't want to complain about his wife and wanted to go home and wouldn't stay over for the sleepover, that guy's in Cobra Kai.
Oh,
is he? What's his name? Wasn't he the star of that movie about the Atlanta bombing?
Richard
Jewell.
Yes, yeah.
He also was. Oh, he was Richard. Yes,
yeah,
he was Richard Lee. Yeah, that was him as well. So yeah, I mean, again, it was kind of wild because I mean, there were a lot of people here that looked so familiar, but I didn't get a chance to look up everybody. But like, so many people look so familiar. Even like the guy from the Calico Cut Pants sketch. I mean, he looks super familiar, but I didn't have a chance to look him up.
I'm pretty sure he was on SNL for a while.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
He was a writer featured.
I think that's Mike O'Brien, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes. Wrong. Yes. Yes. That's him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. That's wild right there.
Actually, I got to say, the sketch with the guys playing poker, that was one of my favorite ones.
It's so good, right?
Really, yeah. Because if you know me, that's kind of exactly what I would do. I would try to like get in and like make a crack. Like, yeah, sure, my wife too. And then immediately be like, what have I done? She's the best woman on earth. I owe everything to her.
Yep. As much as some characters were super extreme and out there, there were some characters that are based in the sketch that were, I feel like, almost super real. Again, mm-hmm. with as opposed to SNL sketches where everyone seems to play, you know, a caricature of themselves, even when they put celebs as themselves in said sketches. I feel like there's some people in these sketches that are 100% real and true to life, and that these super extreme characters kind of, you know, provide this kind of polarizing or foil effect across the board here. And I think that's the reason why some of these sketches or some people kind of think really kind of are more memorable than others. That's just my two cents.
I can see that. I kind of related to that guy at the poker game as well a little bit too, right? Like, because I can feel that breaking point. I can imagine Jamie Taco stealing my lines and just going nuts. Because in a lot of ways at work, Jamie Taco has stolen my lines and I'm just furious.
Same.
So I can definitely relate to this. I think it's that intensity and that frustration and that awkwardness that I very much relate to on a personal level at times. For me, that's something I enjoy seeing on screen and take into this nth degree, that this escalation to really play out in ways that I wouldn't do in real life, but that worked to good effect, I think, on the show.
Yeah, I don't think any one of us has eaten each other's gift receipts at any moment.
Not doing that. Definitely not Lev's.
Although, in contrary to popular belief, Lev, as guest of our show, is in fact not dead.
Yeah, definitely not dead.
Well, maybe if he eats the gift receipt, you know.
Yeah, you gotta watch out for that.
Especially not after having a mud pie. Why do they call it a mud pie, by the way?
It's so weird.
No one has ever called it a mud pie.
Nope. Yeah.
Never.
No. None. Never.
That's what's kind of cool about the show. You know, it's as you said, like on SNL, there's just this, I don't know what you describe it, like sketch comedy world that they live in, where, you know, it's totally not real. No one's like playing a person. They're playing a sketch comedy person. In this show, what's weird is they just sort of like bounce in and out, like with no warning, between the real world and this alternative world that this show exists in.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of never know when it's going to happen. You know, like it could be just three women are at brunch having a normal time. And then suddenly they're talking about how they're like three fat pigs. Oink, oink, gonna, you know, get so fat. And you're like, wait, what? Where did that come from? You know?
Yes, 100%. That is definitely one of the things I love about the show. That insane escalation. I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it, you know, and sometimes it's one character. And like in the poker sketch, that actually played really straight until the last 30 seconds of the sketch, when suddenly all these grown men were going to have a sleepover at people's basement. And you're like, wait, what? You know, or the gift receipt. Actually, I think the gift receipt's like is a perfect example where it starts off with, it's just Tim Robinson acting insane, right?
Yep.
Like everything else is the real world. They're acting like you would normally act at a normal, like adult birthday party. And then all of a sudden out of nowhere, the one woman's like, yeah, I'll eat one as a test. You know, I'll eat the receipt.
Yeah.
And her husband's like, yeah, let my wife eat the receipt.
I'm not going to do it. I'll let my wife do it.
And Stephen Young's like, what just happened? This was like the real world. And now we've like morphed into crazy land.
Yeah, absolutely. It was super wild.
I guess.
And one more thing. I mean, Bob Odenkirk?
He was great. Yes. Loved it. Did not expect that at all.
Triples of the Barracuda and the Roadrunner, and he just got the triples of the Nova, baby.
Well, actually, that's one thing I wanted to mention specifically to you, Dan, that, and I think I probably retweeted this at some point. Somebody set up an entire Twitter thread that is just memes based off the show, but involving craft brewing. And so... I forget if you may or may not have liked that one, but it's literally just like someone talking about like, oh, what should we serve at our craft brewery? Triples are best.
Perfect.
But yeah, the Bob Odenkirk like random hopping was awesome. But I mean, at least for me, and I don't know if you guys have run into this, you know, after having seen the show, I realize it's been a short amount of time, but every time I step on social media, even on channels that aren't dedicated to this show, I'll see random references to this show. And maybe that's
other than the subreddit, obviously. So
Right. Yeah. Outside of the subreddit, even just like randomly, like on my feed, like things will show up. I'm like, I love this show. This is insane. I'm so glad people appreciate it.
I want someone to come out with a calicocutbrewery.com.
Oh, it's only a matter of time if it hasn't happened yet. I mean,
yeah,
there was that mass landing, my style exactly.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, which was based on the Dan Flash sketch.
Triple IPA, mind you.
Triple IPA based on the Dan Flash sketch. They even made the label look like one of the shirts. Like it was real.
It was brilliant. I mean, so brilliant.
That's awesome.
Overall, do you think, is this something you guys will stick with when season three rolls around? It sounds like you already started watching some of the other episodes that I hadn't recommended.
I did. I think I will. I don't know if it's a show I'm going to jump on the day it comes out, but it's going to be one of those shows that I'm going to be sitting around a little bored. And I'm going to be like, all right, well, let me go see. And you just settle in. And then next thing you know, I've watched the whole season.
Yes. Yeah. No, Jason, you literally take the words out of my mouth. I feel the exact same way. I definitely will have to go back and check out the other episodes that could fill the cracks here, as they say. And yeah, I think, again, I think that, you know, every episode, there's usually at least, you know, if there's like, say, 4 to 5 sketches per you know, short episode here. Again, that's the great thing about this series that you kind of emphasized, Nine, in your pitch, is that these are really accessible. Like you blink and you finish the episode practically in some cases. And I think that makes it super digestible because, again, I feel like, you know, that because the stakes are so high when, you know, within the first 30 seconds of each sketch, you know, you kind of get through it things a lot quicker than you would normally think because you're kind of on edge to see what happens. And then boom, all of a sudden the sketch comes to a conclusion, you know, sometimes more, you know, graciously or more, you know, succinctly than others, but you still get the point as it comes across.
I agree.
And I'm not part of the Turbo team for the record.
Yeah, no, I tried to get on the Turbo team. It didn't work out. But awesome. I'm really glad you guys enjoyed this in different ways, but it sounds like everyone came away with something from this, which is awesome. And it's more than you expect from like a random sketch comedy show, I would think. I do truly feel this brought to it a different level. And I did, one last thing I wanted to point out, just based on the stuff that I've randomly read about the show, is that The Ringer did a ranking of all the best sketches from both the first two seasons. And it's interesting because they mentioned, they ranked number one, a sketch that we haven't brought up yet, which was the car focus group sketch.
Oh, yeah. The old guy dabbed in that sketch. That was hilarious.
Yeah. I didn't like it as much. I don't think it's as good as the other ones. Did you guys?
I agree. I've seen it. I watched it, and I was not a fan of that one.
It was okay. Yeah. I understand. I kind of saw where they were kind of going with that, but it was like, stinky inside because you farted. And I get where they're trying to go with it, but yeah, it didn't sing with me as nearly as much as most of the rest of them.
I like the fact that in that sketch, it starts off, because there's so many sketches where it's somebody being obnoxious and that's the whole sketch. And I like the fact that you think that's what it's going to be. And then everyone turns on the other guy by the end.
Right.
You know, and that part was funny. Thought a lot of the lines were not that great. Like the stinky, the wheel. I was like, oh, okay.
He has to marry his mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree with you, Jason. That was definitely my feeling. I mean, on it
for
as well.
Me, like for me, the funniest line out of that was probably the one where he's like, "Paul, you have no good car ideas." Yeah. Like that was probably the funniest line out of the entire thing. And I mean, but it was not nearly as funny as like obviously this list makes it out to be for sure.
Yeah. I'm surprised that was at the top, but
yeah, I actually saw that list and I purposefully looked that episode up. Because I was like, well, that's supposedly the best sketch. And I was like, I don't agree. But you know what one I did see that wasn't on your list that I actually did like was the Driver's Ed one?
Oh, okay. So I love the Driver's Ed one, but I just felt like I'd put too many episodes in to pull in that one.
Yeah.
That's one that lives rent-free in my head all day.
Dan, don't talk about the table. Don't talk about the tables, Dan.
I don't know how to hear any more about tables.
I mean, I don't remember which episode it was. I think it's season two. But what's great about that sketch is like one of the first lines is that. It's, don't talk about the tables. And you're like, what on earth is he talking about? And again, this is one of those sketches. I watched it twice. And the second time I watched it, I was dying when he said, don't talk about the tables from the get-go. Because when you get to the end, you get why that's funny.
Right.
But when it first happens, you're like, what's happening? I don't get it. You know?
Dan, did you catch that one? Or
No. I caught up on the last two right before we recorded tonight, actually. Just because I got a... had a little bit of a crazy night last night with the boys. So, yeah. Oh, but gotcha. I do fully intend to, like I said, fill in the cracks as I can here across the board here. You know, I mean, you know, I might be able to get through more assuming I adhere to a wet diaper dress code, but we'll have to see.
No need for that. But yeah, if you get a chance to check out the Driver's Ed one, I think that one's actually available on YouTube for free, like in its entirety. And I may have randomly texted it to you at some point because that one I love as well. Jason, like, what you know, it's like the tables thing was so weird on the first watch. Why does he keep bringing it up? And then after I've watched it 50 times probably, and I don't think it's something I can't live without. It's something I want when I die. Like, I just want that to be what I hear as I shuffle off this mortal coil. I just want somebody yelling, tables. The tables are my corn.
I will make sure that is on, because let's be honest, my money's on you going first. We're putting that on your gravestone, okay?
Yes.
Excellent. Well, at least we should put it on a piece of paper just so we make it official. Yeah, and I think that, you know, all of us will have to basically, you know, make sure we, you know, shuffle off this mortar coil in the dining room. I mean, the dining room. You know, when it does happen. So
true. We can say whatever the hell we want.
100%.
Yeah, my will's going to be really weird, you guys. You'll probably be involved. And
all the Paul's bearers, you know, have to wear Brian's hat.
Yes. Awesome. So thank you guys so much for for taking the time to go through this insanity. I was particularly passionate about this series for no good reason, but I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. I'm glad this is something you might watch going forward.
Definitely. Thank you for recommending it. It was definitely, it was something I probably never would have found if you hadn't suggested it. So
agreed. Yeah. I this is totally not on my radar either. Yeah. But I'm kind of glad, you know, we're there. And, you know, even with the very unhealthy fascination of hot dogs throughout the entire series here, I'm sure we can, you know, find our way to, you know, be frank about this. So.
Oh, come on.
We almost made it through everything, but I had to throw it in.
Yeah, we're all wondering who did this.
Corn Cup TV.
Well, that happened, folks, which brings us to the end of another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. We hope you had a good time listening to us spout more nonsense today, and hope you join us next week for another exercise in futility. In the meantime, please rate and review us on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or just tell a friend about us. Until next week, keep on watching.